Chapter 22.
Planet Ankura. 7 days before Operation Windbreaker. 3 years later.
The last time Brand had been on Ankuro, its capital, if a planet with only one city and a handful of unmarked settlements could be said to have a capital, had been enclosed by a ray shield that filtered out the billowing dust of the surrounding silica plains. The streets had never been clean, but they'd had a seedy charm. Brand no longer found Ankuro charming. She wore her mask as she walked through alleyways tagged by vivisector gangs, but her eyes had felt gritty since she'd woken. White-skinned, six-fingered men holding scalpels peered at her as she moved, fading into the shadows when they saw the rifle on her back and the knife displayed prominently on her hip. She had already sold her disruptor. She missed it, but nothing on Ankuro fetched a higher price than a lovingly maintained, excruciatingly deadly, and widely banned weapon. The alleys took her beneath a broad awning and into near darkness. Her mask enhanced the silhouettes of dozens of veiled men and women who whispered and haggled and grappled and kissed. Free traders from wild space met with representatives of the Crimora Syndicate, swapping favors for arms and spice. Umbaran spies bartered their services to survivors of the Death Watch. Any one of the market's denizens might have fetched a decent bounty. Like a stray speck of sand, the thought of abandoning her cause and returning to a simpler life drifted through Bran's mind. She shook the thought away and walked on. She reached the side of a shriveled, hobbling Weequay with a face like a desiccated corpse and matched his pace.
"No trouble?"
she asked. Her Hatiz was clumsy. She could have hired a protocol droid or bought a translation program for her mask, but she hoped the effort would win her some respect.
"No trouble," the alien said. "No inquiries. The gangs become curious soon, I think."
Bran reached into her jacket and withdrew a stack of high-value credit chips. She pressed them to the old Weequay's palm.
"Tell the Grandfather of Vice I'm grateful for his help."
With that, she walked on. She felt a presence at her back until she exited the market, at which point her stalker, whatever it was, abandoned its hunt. Could have gone worse, she thought. By the time she arrived at the pod racing track at the city's edge, the lenses on her mask were clouded with grime. She lowered the mask altogether as she neared the metal doors to the great arena, large enough to admit a hover tank but guarded only by a spidery droid. The droid inserted an appendage into a wall socket to acknowledge her arrival, and the door slid open less than half a meter. She had to turn her body to squeeze through. In the vast space beyond the doors, enclosed by the amphitheater but open to the swirling sky, the Thunderstrike rested in a bed of dust. Dozens of Twilight soldiers moved about, dwarfed by the ship's hull. They carted tools and machine parts in from the city or hauled burnt and twisted scrap to junk piles, aided engineers stripping panels or welding scars. Others appeared to have nothing better to do than play dice or wait for trouble. The Thunderstrike wasn't built to land, but it was capable of planetfall in an emergency. The current situation certainly qualified. The ship had limped away from its battle with Prelate Verge, still only half repaired from its battles in the Midrim. To finish the repair job, the engineering crew needed to power whole systems down, and that meant finding a space dock or a flotilla. Or an unused racetrack in the middle of nowhere. If the Empire found Ankuro, if the Prelate tracked Twilight Company down, as he had before, or if the gangs became too curious and turned the rebels in, the Thunderstrike would be defenseless. A pilot on his promise was conducting its own repairs in orbit, operated by a skeleton crew. There was no one to protect the company anymore. So they hid and they waited. And Bran tried not to think about what they'd do, what she would do, after the Thunderstrike was made whole. She tried not to think about how long they could afford to wait. She had said she would try to look out for these people. She'd meant it, but she wasn't anyone's leader. She nodded to the sentries as she approached the massive ship, watched M2-M5, now acting chief of engineering, wrapped in transparent duroplast to protect his joints from dust, blast snide remarks at the repair crews as he administered mechanical triage. She caught Quartermaster Hober's eye, shook her head, and hoped it was enough to communicate the gist of her morning's errands. No emergencies, no progress, and no real change. Gadren and Roach were seated in the dirt. Two of the Basilisk's hands were bandaged, singed during his attempts to reach the hijackers on the Thunderstrike's bridge. Roach rose and crossed toward Brand, but Brand didn't acknowledge her. She didn't dislike Roach. The girl had done her best in Coyurti, and no worse than anyone during the ship's infiltration. But Brand didn't have answers to her inevitable questions. A shout from the gate saved her. Brand unslung her rifle, pivoted on her heel, and hurried back the way she'd come. The great metal doors were sliding open. The sentries wouldn't have called an alarm if anyone from Twilight was still in the city. That meant a stranger was coming to visit. The sentries formed a broad arc around the gate. Brand held her rifle steady, aimed at the crack through which two figures emerged. Both walked unsteadily, leaning lightly against each other for support. One was a bronze-skinned man, lean and compact. The other was a lighter woman with black hair. Each wore a stained and torn jacket, too heavy for Uncural. Brand approached the pair and slung her rifle back over her back. The sentries cautiously lowered their weapons. She cracked a smile as Namir and Chayla stopped a few meters away. "You made it," Brand said.